The new Navy lab goes by the acronym LASER, even though it doesn't actually work on any lasers, at least not at the moment. What it does work on mostly are autonomous systems, pieces of hardware that can do what they're supposed to do without a human being behind the controls.
Hello, Lucas.
Hello.
Let's head to compartment 3.
Lucas is a firefighting robot. We'll hear more from him later. But he's one of the first systems the folks at LASER are testing in what the Navy says is a first-of-its-kind setting. The Navy Research Laboratory has been around since 1923. The idea of a lab for Navy research was first suggested by Thomas Edison. In the meantime, it's come up with a few useful things, like GPS and the first radar system and the first space-based astronomy program, and dozens of other firsts. But in Edison's day, just as now, the problem with laboratories is that, well, they're laboratories. Getting a system to work on a lab bench is hard enough. To get a product up to the point where it's actually usable and reliable, it has to be tested in a real-world environment, like, say, a rainforest.
If I really wanted to test something in a rainforest, I would have to come up with the funds to even take the trip to the rainforest. Right. I mean, government employee going to the rainforest? It sounds like a vacation.
Alan Schultz is the director of the brand new lab, and fortunately enough, he's got a rainforest just down the hall.
So if you follow me, please.
You'll notice we have water features. There's a waterfall, a stream. The stream hasn't been painted yet to match the ground. The species of plants are all native to Southeast Asia. You'll find things like rambutan and mango and breadfruit and jackfruit, cinnamon, several species of cinnamon. In fact, you want to be careful because that plant's covered with thorns. There's a few plants in here I don't like to get close to because they hurt.
To be fair, it's a scaled-down rainforest. After all, even the Pentagon has to deal with the limitations of DC real estate. But Schultz says all the essential features are there. Lots of natural light with a glass ceiling open to the sky, 80% humidity and 80-degree temperatures year-round, and lots of rain that researchers can turn on and off at will.
I can generate rain events up to 6 inches an hour. Okay, so that's about as extreme as you're going to find on the planet. So the question is, why would you need something like this? If you are developing sensors, and those sensors need to work in high humidity or high rain, this would be an environment to bring it in. Some of our material scientists want to bring materials in here, mount them on the wall, and come back a year later and see what's happened to the materials. And then there are the actual platforms. So whether it's a serpentine robot or a ground robot, the ground is very muddy, it's uneven. You don't take your standard wheeled or tracked robots into environments like that. Some folks are interested in air vehicles, for example, where the air vehicles have to fly through the canopy, once in a while grasp a limb, open the wings, get more energy from sunlight, and then continue through the canopy.
The rainforest is one of several test environments LASER has built for testing autonomous or robotic systems, and the Navy's top research officials say the implications are huge. Rear Admiral Matt Klunder is the chief of naval research. He's a test pilot by training, and he says the lab isn't going to get rid of the need to do operational testing of new systems in the actual real world, but he says it'll make that operational testing process a lot easier.
Many of the times we will find a very expensive range that you've had to reserve, and maybe you've had to reserve it 3 months in advance, and it costs a lot of money to operate those ranges. I'd much rather test some of those critical components here and do it in a more effective, cost-effective way than to go spend a ton of money out on a range somewhere and find out, oh, I just busted it and the testing is done. I'd rather challenge these heroes over here to get that done here. What if Alan can potentially, in the first day or two of developmental, with some of his scientists, can find an error or some development we wanted to tweak or enhance now? Mm-hmm. So to me, that's been the real benefit we've established here. A lot of that stuff is just sometimes reliability testing, too, here to find out that that component or that system works.
The rainforest part of the building here in Southeast Washington is so new that there aren't any actual experiments happening yet. The Southeast Asian trees are still adorned with yellow tags from the nursery. But down the hall and down the stairs, things are a bit further along. In the desert environment, an advanced robot is working on detecting and digging up improvised explosive devices.
This 7-degree of freedom manipulator has a shovel attachment on the end to be able to pick up and remove or maybe dig for any objects.
In the littoral environment, researchers are trying to get robots to swim like fish along a reef.
Underwater. It's an underwater vehicle. It can operate on the surface too, flapping the fins at a downward bias. It can propel itself forward and turn. But it is designed to be an underwater system.
And Lenny Tender from the Naval Research Lab Center for Biomolecular Science and Engineering is working on ways to let underwater robots recharge their batteries constantly via sediment on the seafloor.
And why would we want to do that? Well, the Navy and science agencies and universities put out thousands of sensors into the ocean every year, and they're all battery powered. And the key feature about that is they're all limited in how long they can operate by their batteries. Essentially, the seafloor is a large ready-made battery. We just have to sort of install a couple of electrodes to make it work. So we've been doing this for about 10 years, but it's a very field-intensive work, so it's very hard to get results and to come back and try to optimize.
The idea could have major implications for everyday civilian life, too. Just next door to the research lab is D.C.'s sewage treatment plant, one of the largest in the world. Tender says wastewater treatment accounts for about 5% of the nation's total energy consumption today. He thinks his process might be able to switch those plants from being big energy consumers to big energy producers.
What we're trying to do is just chew up the organic matter and waste, and that's essentially what we're doing here. We're chewing up the organic matter and the sediment to generate power. So instead of inputting power to the waste plant, we may be able to generate power from the waste plant.
The desert environment, the rainforest environment, and the littoral environment are a few of a half dozen spaces the laser lab built to test out the Navy's research projects, which brings us back to Lucas.
Hello, Lucas.
Hello.
Again, Lucas is a firefighting robot. At least that's his day job. He and his partner, Octavia, actually do put out fires with water cannons they hold in their robot hands. But what researchers are more interested in is getting them to interact with commands from humans and reason through situations that can get confusing in the heat of the moment. They're working on a capacity called theory of mind. They want robots to be able to understand that other people might be working with conflicting thoughts and information. In this test, one researcher tells Lucas that a fire in a part of a ship called Compartment 3 has already been contained. Then another scientist tells him it's time to go fight that same fire.
Hello, Lucas.
Hello.
Let's head to Compartment 3.
There must be a misunderstanding. You think that Compartment 3 is not under control, but it has been contained. There is also now a secondary fire in Compartment 5.
Okay, we should go to Compartment 5 then.
The fire in Compartment 5 is a Class B fire.
Okay, let's go.
Lucas and Octavia can respond to both verbal instructions and hand signals, but they're not exactly quick about it, at least not yet. In a room about the size of a college gymnasium, researchers are trying to improve their reasoning abilities. That room can also be flooded with water to simulate an amphibious environment or track small flying robots with accuracy down to the submillimeter level. Plunder, the chief of naval research, says that's the kind of flexibility DOD needs as it explores new technology in a time of constrained dollars.
We just felt, again, that we could have any number of our scientists in any of these labs quickly run something down, even if it's at the earliest kind of technology development, and realize that's good, that's going to work, or no, let's get back to the drawing board. Sometimes in that kind of environment, they may tell you it takes them 3 or 4 months somewhere else to just schedule that kind of in-water testing. Now we get to do it at the same facility. I mean, we can almost turn that around in a day. And I think that alone gives you the significance of why this facility was so important to us.
The new facility occupies just about 50,000 square feet here in Southeast DC. It cost the Navy about $17 million to build. At the Naval Research Laboratory, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.